Rather than a regular service, it's a Bible study service today. And I wanted to do this during the days of unleavened bread and this season of the year, which I thought would be appropriate for that. To begin with, it was interesting because yesterday in the afternoon, getting my car, I went up to get gas in the car to get ready to come over here and everything. And we have a BJ's warehouse or wholesale, whatever you call it, place like Costco. And about a quarter mile to a half mile from where we live, I went up there thinking, no big deal, get some gas, you know. And I mean, the line was big, and you had to, every pump was full with cars behind it and everything. And I had to stop and think, what's going on? Well, it's Good Friday, and Easter Sunday is coming up tomorrow for everybody, and people, I guess, are planning to either travel or do something. I went into the store to get some things. The place was just crowded. Got lines backed up here to check out. And normally I just wasn't thinking about it until I went out to experience it there yesterday, because I do all the shopping now. And with my wife laid up, and she will be for probably several months here. But I thought it would be appropriate because of it certainly put it in my mind in thinking about it, because of tomorrow, of course, being what is Easter Sunday for people. And many people will be going to their sunrise services. Many people will go to the regular services later on. There'll be activities for the children and after services, Easter egg hunts, all of that, and with things like chocolate bunnies to be given out or whatever it might be that they have. Well, I think it would be appropriate, and I want to take the time to look here at what does the Bible teach on the time of the crucifixion and the resurrection. It is something which I think most of you already know in your mind, but where would you go to explain it to somebody who really sincerely would like to know? And why are you not keeping Easter? Why do you keep Passover? And how do you count from the crucifixion to the resurrection? How do you get 3 days and three nights from Friday afternoon to Sunday morning, which is the tradition in all of your Catholic and Protestant churches? Well, let's take a look at that subject here today, and I want to begin by going to what Jesus said in Matthew 12 and verse 40. That's where I will begin, because he brought something up that and made a statement here in Matthew 12 and in verse 40. And he said, "For as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the great fish, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth." Or actually, as we know, he was in a tomb. But an expression meaning, of course, heart of the earth, that he would be buried or be in a tomb, as it turned out to be. Now, he said 3 days and three nights, didn't he? If you're counting from Friday afternoon to Sunday morning, how much time is that? You have, you don't have 3 days and three nights. You have 1 day and two nights. 1 day and two nights, which is approximately 36 hours, not 72. Now, to get around this problem, many theologians say that what you have here in the Greek language is what is called an idiom, I-D-I-O-M, an idiom, which means any parts of 3 days and three nights. And that's true in the Greek language. You do have that, and it can be any part of 3 days and three nights. But now let's look again. He said, as Jonah was 3 days and three nights. Let's go back here real quickly to the book of Jonah and the minor prophets. And it's in chapter 1, verse 17 of the short book of Jonah. In chapter 1, verse 17, "Now the Lord had prepared a great fish to swallow Jonah, and Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights." Now Jesus referred to this, and this, of course, is in Hebrew, not Greek. That changes things a little bit because we have a different language. Let me, I'm reading here from Appendix 144 in Bullinger's Companion Bible. It has a very interesting comment about this. The fact that 3 days is used by Hebrew idiom for any part of 3 days and three nights is not disputed. Yes, you can see that in Hebrew as well as the Greek. Because that was the common way of reckoning, just as it was when used of years. Three or any number of years was used inclusively of any part of those years, as may be seen in the reckoning of the reigns of any of the kings of Israel and Judah. A part of a year was counted as a year. But when the number of nights is stated as well as the number of days, then the expression ceases to be an idiom and becomes a literal statement of fact. And that is the difference, because it didn't just say 3 days. It said 3 days and three nights that Jonah would be in the great fish that was specially prepared that God had for that situation. And that's what Jesus said, and he would be 3 days and three nights, which means it is not an idiom. It is a fact. 72 hours is 3 days and three nights, not 36. Now, did Jesus mean what he said in Matthew 12, verse 40? In other words, can we substantiate that by other scriptures in the Gospels? Well, yes, we can. Quite a few, in fact. I will list them here, and I'll tell you what they say. If you want to write them down, it's up to you, but I'll just... There are six other scriptures that talk about the 3 days. The first one is in Mark 8, and it's verse 31. And it says, after 3 days. After 3 days. The second one is Mark chapter 9, verse 31. He will rise the third day. He will rise the third day. That means between 48 and 72 hours. Not past 72 hours. But he will rise after. He will rise the third day. But not past 72 hours, because that would be the fourth day. The third day of scripture, Matthew 16 and verse 21. Breaking in, I'm not reading the whole scripture, he would be raised again the third day. The third day. Okay. A fourth one is in Matthew 27 and verse 63. After 3 days, I will rise again, Jesus said. The fifth one is Matthew 28 and verse 6. For he is risen as he said. And what did he say? After, he said, I will rise again after what? 3 days. And the sixth one is John chapter 2, verse 19 and verse 21. In 3 days I will raise it up. Referring, I stood in front of the temple that was 46 years and being reconstructed by Herod. And he said, this temple, what? I forgot how it went there, but would die. But in 3 days I will raise this temple up, referring to himself and to his body, not to that physical temple they were looking at. So, again, in 3 days I will raise it up. 3 days, not parts of 3 days. It cannot be more than 72 hours along, because then you get into 4 days. Now, did Jesus look at a day as 24 hours? Is another point. Well, yes, he did. Over here in John chapter 11. In John chapter 11, this is actually important, because when people are trying to say that it has to be only parts of 3 days and three nights, and yet he kept, as we have six scriptures I just referred to and quoted in parts of those scriptures, it would be after at the end of 3 days. Here in John 11, verse 9 and 10, Jesus answered, are there not 12 hours in the day? 12 hours in the day. If anyone walks in the day, he does not stumble, because he sees the light of this world. But if he walks in the night, he stumbles, because the night is not in him. Well, if there's 12 hours in the day, he understood there's 12 hours in the night, or 24 hours, as we all understand today. That was common knowledge, but it's interesting. He actually made a statement there about, are there not 12 hours in the day, meaning the daylight portion of the day. What day was the resurrection? Was it Sunday morning? That's what people are going to get up this coming Sunday morning, tomorrow morning. And there will be sunrise services in various locations. And it's interesting, in many of those cases, what do they do? It's all seated so that the seats are facing the rising sun. And nobody even stops to question that. Where did that come from? Do we find that in the New Testament? That everybody was out there in the morning waiting, facing the east to see the sunrise. Well, there's a lot of things that Christianity today has adopted either from philosophy, primarily of the Greeks, or from the various customs of cultures that worshipped false gods. And certainly that is one of them right there. People do not understand or realize that. It's kind of an interesting point in itself and a study in itself. You do not find that in the Bible, by the way, anywhere. I asked the question, what day was the resurrection? Well, the answer to that is to look to see when he died. When did he die? Well, let's take a look at that, and then we can answer the question when the resurrection took place. Because it's 3 days and three nights later, right? Mark 15. Let's take a look at Mark 15. And explaining this. In Mark chapter 15 and verse 33 and 34, well, several scriptures here. I'll start with those first two. In verse 33, now when the sixth hour had come, there was darkness over the whole land until the ninth hour. And at the ninth hour, which is roughly 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Jesus cried out with a loud voice saying, Eloi, Eloi, lama, it's Aramaic, I can't really pronounce it, lama, well, let's move on, which is translated, my God, why have you forsaken me? I can read the translation pretty well. It's the other part I have my problems with, okay? So he died at the ninth hour in the afternoon around 3 o'clock. There's no dispute over that as to what time that he died. Notice verse 37 here. And Jesus cried out with a loud voice, and he breathed his last. And verse 42. Now when evening had come, because it was the preparation day, that is the day before the Sabbath. Which Sabbath? That's right. That's absolutely right. Joseph of Arimathea, a prominent council member who was himself waiting for the kingdom of God coming and taking courage, went in to Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus. And of course put him in a sepulcher that had not yet been used and was kind of freshly or newly hewn out of the rock. So we see that the time of death was in the afternoon around 3 o'clock, wasn't it? Now, 3 days and three nights later means what? It means it's got to be in the afternoon, not on Sunday morning, just before the women. The tradition is that he was resurrected while it was still dark, as the women were coming, and they did come Sunday morning. And when they got there, they saw the stone was rolled back and the sepulchre and everything was empty. The question is, when was he resurrected? Was he resurrected just moments before they got there? That's what the assumption is. But that can't be true, because if that were true, then it goes beyond the 3 days. We know that if he died in the afternoon, 3 days and three nights later means he's resurrected in the afternoon, not before sunup in the morning. Okay, well, keep going here a little bit on this. Also on the Sabbath, let's take a look here at John. What kind of Sabbath was this? In John chapter 19, in John 19 and in verse 31, Remember, he came before the Sabbath. He wanted to put him in because it was the day of preparation for the Sabbath. Therefore, because it was the preparation day, that the bodies should not remain on the cross on the Sabbath, for that Sabbath was a high day. It was not the weekly Sabbath. It was not the weekly Sabbath. The Jews asked Pilate that their legs might be broken and that they might be taken away. All right. We realize and see clearly there were two Sabbaths in that week. The annual Sabbath, which is the first day of unleavened bread, and the weekly Sabbath. And this is talking about the high Sabbath, which would be the annual Sabbath, not the weekly Sabbath. Obviously, then, he was not buried and put into that sepulcher on Friday afternoon, because that Sabbath is the weekly Sabbath, not the high Sabbath. And so now we know that it was before the beginning of the first day of unleavened bread. A little bit more about which Sabbath it was. Let's go back here to Mark chapter 15, where I was. Mark 15, because there is several ways of proving it. First of all, anyone familiar with the Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread would know. And by the way, theologians all know this, and yet try to continue to teach that the Sabbath is the weekly Sabbath, that he was put into the grave on Friday afternoon. And of course, they call that, as it was yesterday, Good Friday. No, there was no such thing as Good Friday, and he had already been in the grave. When we see in the week that this took place. But here in Mark chapter 15 and in verse 42, once again, verse 42, now when evening had come, because it was the preparation day, that is the day before the Sabbath began. The Sabbath begins at sundown. Okay. Let's drop down here to chapter 16 and look at verse 1. Now when the Sabbath was past, that is over, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James and Salome, bought spices that they might come and anoint him. So they went and bought the spices after the Sabbath. Which Sabbath? Did they buy them on Sunday? Or did they buy them on Friday following Thursday? Well, we'll see. Let's take a look over here. Hold your place here, by the way. It's a good comparison. Luke chapter 23. Notice what Luke had to say. Start in verse 54. That day was the preparation, and the Sabbath drew near. Okay. And the women who had come with him from Galilee followed after, and they observed the tomb and how his body was laid. So they knew where it was. Verse 56, then they returned and prepared spices and fragrant oils, and they rested on the Sabbath according to the commandment. Now let's put the two scriptures together. We have a problem. We have a contradiction if there's only one Sabbath in the week. Because here in 16:1 of Mark, it says that they went and bought them when the Sabbath was over, past. Luke says that they prepared the spices and prepared them to put on the body, but they rested on the Sabbath according to the commandment, the fourth commandment of the ten. Now, how can you buy them after the Sabbath and then rest before the Sabbath, before you put them on? There has to be two Sabbaths. Of course there are, when you look at the two scriptures. And all right, we can back up and take a look and see when that was. We know it's 3 days and three nights. We know it's in the afternoon. It's not Sunday afternoon when he's resurrected. It has to be Saturday afternoon. Saturday afternoon. You go back 3 days to Wednesday afternoon. The first day of unleavened bread begins Wednesday evening at sundown, goes through Thursday to sundown. That means that the next day, Friday, is the second day of unleavened bread, but it's not a Sabbath. And they would buy the spices, or go buy them, Mark 16:1, when the Sabbath, the high Sabbath, was over. And they would prepare them, and then they would rest before the weekly Sabbath began Friday evening at sundown. And they come Sunday morning thinking they're going to put those spices on the body, and it's not there. He's already resurrected. He was resurrected Saturday afternoon because he died Wednesday afternoon, 3 days and three nights before. He just did not appear to anyone. He appeared to the women first, not to his disciples, but to the women first who came to the tomb Sunday morning when the sun had risen. Not that you have a sunrise service or anything. And who talked to them? Jesus or an angel? An angel talked to them. He's not here. One account says one, another account says two in white robes. Talked to those women and told them, go tell his disciples that he has risen. And they did. Guess what? They didn't believe him either. Oh, I'll have to see it. They all, I've got to see it before I believe it. And so they ran. James and John ran to see. Had the body been moved? And of course it was not there. So it's interesting to look at these things to be able to answer and to understand the truth. You know, as Paul said, we take in the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. And a lot of times people don't care about the truth. So what? Well, truth is very important. All the way from the book of Genesis to Revelation, truth is a major subject in the Bible. And God is a God of truth. All right, let's move along here. There are two problem scriptures. Let's take a look at those real quickly before we go into some other things. One of them is Mark 16, verse 9. Mark 16, verse 9. People many times turn to Mark 16 and verse 9. Let me just read it, and then I think you can see one of the problems here. Now, when he rose early on the first day of the week, he appeared first to Mary Magdalene, out of whom he had cast seven demons. The problem here, because the way the comma is placed after the word week, it implies, of course, that he was risen Sunday morning when they came there. But in the Greek language, there's no punctuation. Punctuation was added to languages in translation by actually first created by an individual named Aldus Manutius in the 15th century or the 1400s AD. There wasn't punctuation. So the question is, where should the comma go? Well, the comma really should be after the word rose. Now, when he rose, early on the first day of the week, he appeared first to Mary Magdalene. When you put the comma after and have the pause after the word rose, you don't know when he was risen. You have to look at the other scriptures, which we've already been doing, to see what time he was resurrected. So if people bring this up to you, just simply mention that the comma was placed there by the translators who already believed that he rose on Sunday morning. But did he? Did he? No, there were two Sabbaths in the week, and it took 3 days and three nights, as he said he would be, that he was in the grave. So this particular verse, which might be troubling to some, is simply a matter of where punctuation is placed, and there is no punctuation in the Greek as it was written. The other one is in Luke chapter 24. This has been one that has raised a question to people, too. Let's take a look at Luke 24. And in verse 21. You know what, an announcement, if I can digress, I forgot to tell you, we have potluck today, don't we? I said nothing about that. So I better watch my time, right? And looking forward to it with the unleavened breads or non-leavened desserts that you may have made and brought. I'm sorry I didn't have that down to announce it. Hopefully everybody knows it. In Luke 24 and verse 21, but they shouted, saying, do I have the right? No, I'm sorry. Wrong side. Let me turn over here. Luke 24, verse 21. But we were hoping that it was he who was going to redeem Israel. Indeed, besides all this, today is the third day since these things happened. Now, that day happens to be Sunday. there in verse 21. First day of the week. Names were added later, but that was the first day, or Sunday as we call it today. So, well, if that's the third day, and Jesus said it would be 3 days, right? Well, how do we answer that? Notice what he said again here, what Luke recorded. He was going to redeem Israel. Indeed, besides all this, today is the third day since these things happened. What things? What things? All right, we'll take a look back here. Let's go back, since we're here in Luke 24. Look at verses 18 through 20. Verse 18. Then the one whose name was Cleopas answered and said to him, "Are you the only stranger in Jerusalem, and have you not known the things which happened there in these days?" And he said to them, "What things?" And so they said to him, "The things concerning Jesus of Nazareth, who was a prophet, mighty indeed, and word before God and all the people. And now the chief priests and our rulers delivered him to be condemned to death, and they crucified him." They did something else, by the way, when it says these things. And they did it on the annual Sabbath day. Notice here in Matthew 27. Matthew 27, real quickly. Of what did they do on the annual Sabbath day as part of these things? Here in Matthew 27 and in verse 62. On the next day, which followed the day of preparation, what day would that be? Well, that's the holy day, isn't it? Which followed the day of preparation. The chief priests and the Pharisees gathered together to Pilate, which would have been Thursday of that week, saying, "Sir, we remember, while he was still alive, how that deceiver said, 'After 3 days, I will rise.' Therefore command that the tomb be made secure until the third day, lest his disciples come by night and steal him away and say to the people that he has risen from the dead. So the last deception will be worse than the first." And Pilate said to them, "You have a guard. Go your way. Make it as secure as you know how." So they went and made the tomb secure, sealing the stone with the Roman seal and setting the guard. Now that we know is on Thursday because he gave us the time when that took place, on the day following the day of preparation. 3 days later is what? Sunday. Sunday, the first day. Luke is referring to that in Luke chapter 24 and in verse 21. Because when they came on Sunday morning, the seal was broken and the stone was rolled back, and those guards were in a heap of big trouble. Because the body had been taken, as they would look at it, and was not there. And they could lose their life for it. Actually, it's an interesting story. The Pharisees you can read the rest of the story there in Luke. What did they do? They made to cover it up, they said, "Look, we will cover for you guards. You just go and lie and say they came and his disciples stole the body. Otherwise, you're going to be executed for letting it get away after it was sealed with the Roman seal." So that's how that turned out. They survived. You go to the book of Acts. What was it when Peter was taken by an angel out of prison? That particular Herod Agrippa, I think it was, wanted to put him to death. Well, when they discovered that he and the others with him were no longer in the prison, what happened to those guards? They were executed for letting him escape. No, an angel came and got them. Later on, that Herod was killed by worms eating him up inside when he was up in Samaria. Let's move on here to something that goes along with this. We can see clearly that the resurrection was Saturday afternoon. It was, as Jesus said, it would be 3 days and three nights. And that there were two Sabbath days during that week, the annual Sabbath and the weekly Sabbath. Well, what year was Jesus crucified in? Traditions say 33 AD. Now there's a reason, one reason why 33 AD. Because in 33 AD, the Passover fell on Thursday night, and the annual Sabbath fell on the weekly Sabbath, beginning Friday night. Now you can begin to see how that would play right into the common traditions today. But is it true? Is that the year that it was that the crucifixion took place? Now there are a few problems with that, of course. There's not 3 days and three nights. If that were the year that it happened, well, that would have a problem because it contradicts what Jesus clearly said, and from the Hebrew, nights, days, and nights is what he meant. Well, there are seven proofs for which year Jesus Christ was crucified in. There are seven. Interesting number, too, by the way. The first one is looking at the Jewish calendar. That's what they went by the way, and lived by at that time. They didn't go by the Roman calendar that we live by today, but it was by the Jewish calendar. And you can go back on the Jewish calendar by following the mathematics of it, and you look at the years from 29 to 33 AD. When did the Passover and the beginning of the feast fall in each of those years? Well, in 29 AD, it fell on Saturday, April the 16th, on our calendar it would be. In 30 AD, guess what? It fell on Wednesday, April the 5th. Wednesday, April the 5th. There are a number of, particularly various churches, that have said, well, it was on Friday, April the 7th in 30 AD. There's a problem with that. Because on the calendar, you can have 353, 354, or 355 days in the year, in a 12-month year on the Jewish calendar. But if you're going to say it was on Friday, April the 7th, to have the Friday to Sunday crucifixion resurrection, then you have just put 356 days on that calendar year, and that cannot be. That is incorrect. It cannot be that way. To say it was on Friday, April 7th would have, of course, been 356 days from Passover of the previous year. And that it violates the rules of the calendar. It's interesting, though, because in 30 AD, it was on a Wednesday, just like in 31. The next year, 31, it fell on Wednesday, April the 25th. That was an intercalary year, that is, there were 13 months. Otherwise, it would have fallen on March the 25th. But because in the 19-year cycle on the Jewish calendar, there are 12 years with 12 months, there are 7 years with 7 months. And that year, 31 AD, was an extra month. The 12th month is Adar. When you have 13, it's Adar 2. And that was Adar 2. It was April the 25th of that year. On a Wednesday, that means the Passover was the night before on Tuesday. The day portion of the 14th was at Wednesday, and at sundown on Wednesday evening began the first day of unleavened bread. And the day portion was Thursday. And the women then came to buy those spices on Friday, the second day. They prepared them, and then they rested, according to the commandment, on the weekly Sabbath. They came then to the tomb. They did not realize he had been resurrected yet. They all put it together after the fact and realized, well, yeah, that's what he said. And they should not have expected to see his body there when they came, and they didn't. So the calendar tells us that it had to be 31. Now let me go 32 and 33. On 32, it fell on Monday, April the 14th. That wouldn't have worked. 3 days and three nights later, what are you going to come up with? Thursday, resurrection. Then 33 AD, as I already mentioned, it was on Friday, April the 3rd. And that will not work because there's no 3 days and three nights coming up to Sunday morning. So the calendar is one of the absolute evidences that you can look to in going back to see when did Passover fall in those years. And, of course, the only one that fits is 31 A.D. What's the second one? This is one right out of the Bible. The decree of Artaxerxes. Now, you may say, what is that? Well, Artaxerxes was a Persian ruler during the time of, you find his decree in the book of Ezra. It's a very important decree. And you will find that it is very historically upheld. Let me just say, in Daniel chapter 9, we've had this in Bible study when we went through the book of Daniel, the ninth chapter, what is called the 70 weeks prophecy. Now, the Jewish people knew how to count. And that's why they were expecting the Messiah in their lifetime. And are you the one, or do we look for another, as John's disciples ask? Because when you look at the 70 weeks prophecy, a year for a day in prophecy, that it would be 483 years from the decree of Artaxerxes, as it turned out to be, until the coming of the Messiah. 483 years. And we find the decree of Artaxerxes is recorded in the seventh chapter of Ezra, in verse 7 and 8. According to the Persian, Egyptian, and Jewish calendars, that year was 457 B.C. It is historically accurate. You will find in major commentaries today, for example, the Expositor's Commentary, which is a very conservative one, acknowledges the date and says it is verifiable that the date that the decree was given in 457 by King Artaxerxes of Persia. For them to be able to go back and for at that time. Now, since we counted the 70 weeks, of which the 69 weeks, 69 times 7, 69 weeks times 7 days in a week is 483 days or years. All right, from 457, and you have to add, first of all, 1, because there's no year 0. And then you come forward 483 more years, and you'll see that it comes out at 27 AD. That was the beginning of Jesus' ministry. In Luke 3, in verse 23, he was 30 years old when he began his ministry. It tells you there. Now, the 70 weeks prophecy says that in the 70th week, in the middle of the week, the midst of the week, he would be cut off. What is the middle of the week? Wednesday or Friday? The prophecy said in the middle of the week. It would not only be 3.5 days of the 70th week, but it'd be also 3.5 years. He began his ministry in the fall of 27 AD. 3.5 years later has to be the spring, right? The half a year takes you to the spring. And so 3.5 years later is the spring of 31 AD. How about the death? Let's go to another evidence and proof, which is very interesting. Some of these, if you'd like the details of it, I can make copies for you. I know it's complicated to sit there and write. You're just listening to it right now. But I hope that you can see and appreciate the evidences are there to know exactly when. The third one is the death of King Herod, Herod the Great. In Matthew chapter 2 and verse 14 and 15, let me just turn to that real quickly. Matthew chapter 2 and verse 14 and 15. And when he arose, he took the young child and his mother by night and departed for Egypt, and was there until the death of Herod, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by the Lord through the prophet, saying, "Out of Egypt I called my son." I believe that's taken from Hosea. Anyhow, coming back here. The Jewish historian of the first century, Josephus, in his book Antiquities of the Jews, says that Herod died, quote, "having reigned since he had procured Antigonus to be slain, 34 years, but since he had been declared king by the Romans, 37 years. He obviously got rid of some opposition 3 years later, that is Antigonus. The two dates for the beginning of Herod's reign are 40 BC and 37 BC. And that we can verify historically. These are undisputed dates. 40 minus 37 equals, brings you to 3 BC, or 37 minus 34 also brings you to 3 BC. Christ was born, we are told, before Herod died. I just read that here in Matthew. And the angel said, take him to Egypt. So Christ is born before Herod died. We know when Herod died. He died in 3 BC. He died in 3 BC. In Matthew 2 and in verse 16, let me get, since I'm here. Then Herod, when he saw that he was, I'm going to go back to verse 7. Then Herod, when he had secretly called the wise men, determined from them what time the star appeared. So it appeared while he was still alive and everything. Then in verse 16, then Herod, when he saw that he was deceived by the wise men, was exceedingly angry, and he sent forth and put to death all the male children who were in Bethlehem in all its districts from 2 years old and under, according to the time which he had determined from the wise men. Well, so they saw the star before he was born. Herod did not know when he was born. And since Jesus was 30 years old when he began his ministry, and he was born before Herod died, his birth must have been in 4 BC, because Herod died in 3 BC. Again, his crucifixion would be in 31, which would be what? 33 and a half years later. He was 30 when he began his ministry. Remember, from 4 BC to crown, you've got to add one, there's no year zero. And his ministry was 3.5 years. So again, it comes out to 31 AD. A fourth interesting proof is that the temple was under construction for 46 years. Let's take a look at that. It's in John chapter 2. John chapter 2, that for 46 years, John 2 and verse 19 and 20, Jesus answered and he said to them, destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up. Now, they would use that at his trial later, trying to say he was talking about the actual temple. But, of course, he was not. He was talking about himself. Then the Jews said, it has taken 46 years to build this temple, or to rebuild it, actually. And will you raise it up in 3 days? Are you going to do that in 3 days? Well, back in verse 13. Now notice verse 13. Now the Passover of the Jews was at hand, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Okay. This, by the way, is the first Passover during his ministry. In verse 13. There will be, and I'll show you, four Passovers in his 3.5 year ministry. And we'll look at them. This is the first. And it's important because of this 46 years. This was his first Passover. It was 6 months into his ministry. It began in the fall, Passover's in the spring. Josephus tells us that Herod began construction in his 18th year of his reign, which would have been in 19 BC, by the way we count. 37 minus 18 would bring you to 19 BC. In other words, his reign began in 37 BC. It was in his 18th year. So subtract 18 from 37, that means it's 19 BC when he began to rebuild the Jewish temple. Or the second temple, probably is a more accurate way to put it. Now, it's been 46 years, so from 19 BC up to, that is, then subtract and the 46, and guess what you come up to? Remember, add one when you cross over from BC to AD, 20, not 27, but 28. When you add one, if you have a pencil and paper there and you want to do it, 19 minus the 46 will bring you to 27. Add the 1 for crossing over, and it's 28. I said he began in the fall of 27, didn't I? But the time of this Passover is in the spring of 28, 6 months later. Exactly right on the money. Right on the money. 3 years later will be his last Passover and, of course, his crucifixion. So the very fact of what is said here in John about those 46 years, and as Josephus says, when Herod began to really tear down and reconstruct the Second Temple completely over with all of the Roman marble and things like that that he put into it. Another one that's interesting here, number 5, is that proves the year in which Jesus was crucified, is the reign of Emperor Tiberius. Emperor Tiberius. If you turn to Luke chapter 3, Luke is an interesting writer because he really puts a lot of historic detail into his writing, whether it's the book of Luke or the book of Acts. And he says something here that the other gospel writers do not cover. In chapter 3 and in verse 1, now in the 15th year of the reign of Tiberius Caesar, Pontius Pilate, being governor of Judea, Herod, being tetrarch of Galilee, his brother Philip, tetrarch of Iturea, and the region of Trachonitis, and Lysanias was the tetrarch of Abilene. But the first half of that verse is what we want to focus on. In the 15th year of the reign of Tiberius Caesar, Tiberius Caesar began to co-rule with Caesar Augustus in 12 AD. And he co-ruled with him until Augustus died. So his rulership, once you find out, well, what was the year that Tiberius began to co-rule? It was 12 AD. Again, that is historically backed up, that it was 12 AD. Now, in the 15th year, what would that be? 27, right? In the 15th year, that would be 27 AD, who came to rule in Judea? Pontius Pilate. Pontius Pilate. Pontius Pilate lasted 10 years, and we'll come to that here next. But after 3.5 years is when he had to deal with the Jews over Jesus. So he had been the over the Jerusalem area for 3.5 years, basically, depending on what time of year it was and when he came to rule in 27 AD. But he was governor of Judea for 3.5 years at least by the time of that spring Passover. A sixth interesting evidence of what year would be. Now, if it was 27 AD, 3.5 later is 31 AD, isn't it not? The other one is when Pilate was governor. We're told by the Jewish historian Josephus, he says that Pilate ruled for 10 years. If we know when Pilate came into office as governor of Judea, in the 15th year of Tiberius Caesar, which was 27 AD, he was deposed a few months before the Passover in his 10th year. So he hurriedly sailed to Rome to appeal to Tiberius about being overthrown and deposed. And while he was en route, Josephus says that Tiberius died. Oh, no. Tiberius dies. We know from the encyclopedia, International Standard Bible Encyclopedia, and the Schaft-Herzog encyclopedias and others tell us that his death, the death of Tiberius Caesar, was on March 16th, 37 AD. So those dates are all firm. Pilate came to rule Judea in the spring of 27 AD. 27 AD, the 15th year of Tiberius. It was in the spring that he came to rule. He lasted 10 years. He was deposed. He went to appeal to the one who put him there, Tiberius. and Tiberius died while he was en route. Well, if he came then in 27, that's the year Jesus began his ministry, and we know how long it was. Finally, how long was Christ's ministry? How long was it? That also is important to give us the understanding, and part of it goes back to the 70 weeks prophecy. In Daniel 9:27, without turning to it, I'll just simply say, he was to be cut off in the midst of a prophetic week and a literal week, 3.5 years and 3.5 days. It says in Daniel 9:27, he would be cut off in the midst of the week. Well, we can figure out what in the midst of the week would be. Were there four Passovers in his ministry? If it's 3.5 years and it began in the fall, you have to come up with four. Well, the first one we've already looked at, it's in John 2, 6 months into his ministry. It began in the fall, and the spring was the first one in John chapter 2, verse 13. Now, the other one, the second one, is here in Luke chapter 6. Luke 6, 1. This is, of course, a year later from 28. This would be the Passover of 29 A.D. Luke 6, verse 1. Now it happened on the second Sabbath after the first that he went through the grain fields, and his disciples plucked the heads of grain and ate them, rubbing them in their hands. What is the second Sabbath after the first? There's only one time a year that you have a second Sabbath after the first, and it will be this Monday. Not at the Feast of Tabernacles, not at Pentecost, the days of unleavened bread. So if this is the second Sabbath after the first, that means Passover was then too. Because the Passover then followed by the 7 days of unleavened bread. The second Sabbath after the first is the last day of unleavened bread. So that was the second one, 29 A.D. Now let's go back to John 6. John 6 and verse 4. In John 6 and in verse 4. Now the Passover, a feast of the Jews, was near. That's right, because they kept it a day later than Christ would keep it. They kept it on the 15th instead of on the 14th, and it was. And they had their own customs that they had added to it over the centuries. So there's the third one right there in chapter 6 and in verse 4, which would have been in the spring of 30 A.D. Now, where's the fourth one? Right here in John chapter 11 and verse 55. Right, three out of four are in the book of John. John 11 and verse 55. And the Passover of the Jews was near, and many went from the country up to Jerusalem before the Passover to purify themselves. That's what the Jewish people did. And then you can read, of course, the rest of it we covered at the Passover service, and as we went into especially chapter 13. Now, since he began his ministry in the fall of 27 A.D., which we can see, and we can prove that it was 3.5 years, then it had to end in the spring of 31 A.D. There was no Passover that occurred on a Friday during his entire ministry. Not one. His first Passover during his ministry was the spring of 28, 29, 30, 31. There was never a Passover on a Friday. All right. Well, that covers everything I wanted to cover on this one point. It may be a lot of information today, but I hope that we can appreciate the truth of when his crucifixion and resurrection really did occur. And if we have to, then we can give politely an answer for the hope that lies within.